Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. With midterm elections less than a month away, candidates across the country are pushing hard towards the finish line, but newly released campaign spending data suggests there's at least one candidate here in Massachusetts who may be looking beyond 2018, Senator Elizabeth Warren. In the last 2 weeks alone, Warren has run more than 400 digital ads on Facebook, seen by millions across the country. And so far in 2018, she's the third highest political spender, trailing only President Trump and Beto O'Rourke, who's running an unexpectedly competitive race against Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Set this spending pattern alongside Warren's comment last month that she will take a hard look, that was quote, take a hard look, at running for president, and it seems like she may well be gearing up for a spot in the 2020 scuffle. Republican State Representative Jeff Deal, who's challenging Warren for her Senate seat, says it's unfair to Massachusetts for Warren to be running for re-election while also eyeing a potential presidential run, and he's called on her to drop out of the race. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks recently spoke with Deal and started by asking the state representative to clarify why he believes Warren should drop out.
If she gets elected and then starts running for president, that's at least one or two more years of nobody working down in Washington to have a seat at the table at a time when we need a voice in Washington to help us in Massachusetts.
Plenty of senators run for president during their terms. In 2016, five sitting senators, including Lindsey Graham, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Bernie Sanders all ran for president. John McCain ran for president when he was a senator. What about Senator John F. Kennedy? He ran for president when he was a senator.
That's not the same argument as when you're running for that seat. You know, if you've become the senator and you have a list of accomplishments you can point to, great. But for her, she's actually telegraphing that she wants to run for the presidency while she's still trying to run for a current seat.
All right, well, let me talk about some specific issues. Senator Warren made some strong comments on CNBC about the need for Congress to take up what she called sensible reform on gun laws. So here's a bit of what she said.
It is our responsibility here in the United States Congress to make sensible changes on behalf of the American people, not simply to be held hostage by the NRA.
And she went on to list a couple of possible reforms, including expanding background checks, limiting weapon capacity. Universal background checks is something the public has continually shown broad support for across party lines. Are there any gun law reforms that you would consider?
There's a bill that passed the House recently. It's called National Reciprocity. What it would do is allow lawful gun owners who have a license here in Massachusetts and other states where they license gun owners to have reciprocity, meaning that could be used in any other state, much
right.
like your driver's license.
Right. So if you have a gun permit from Texas, you could carry legally in Massachusetts.
Correct.
For example.
I think.
Doesn't that kind of trample on state rights? I mean, it's an interesting case for Republicans to make because Massachusetts wants this set of laws, and you're basically saying, no, we're going to trample all over those.
Well, I'm not saying trample. I'm saying Massachusetts has laws that work in this state. We haven't had Sandy Hook. We haven't had the massacre down in Florida because I think we have gun laws that even gun owners in Massachusetts agree is good. We don't have a gun show loophole.
But wouldn't reciprocity be a problem for Massachusetts laws because it would essentially negate them?
Not if you're negotiating properly to make sure that our standards become part of the national standards. And I think that's part of the discussion I can bring to the table in Washington.
Let me stick with gun laws. I want to ask you about a bunch of independent studies that suggest that states with the toughest gun laws have the lowest levels of gun violence. Connecticut, Massachusetts are among them. In fact, countries with strong gun laws have much lower levels of gun violence than the U.S. with relatively permissive gun laws and has some of the highest rates of gun violence in the developed world. Does that suggest that stronger gun control works and that as a U.S. senator, you would support it?
Well, first of all, we're ignoring the example of Chicago where they have some of the most stringent gun laws and yet some of the most rampant, you know, abuse of gun violence out there. And yet the other thing is you look at other countries where guns are restricted, you have, unfortunately, a rising use of knives in Britain. I'm not saying, by the way, that we would need to ban knives. I'm just saying that, unfortunately, people are going to find a way to use violence in some different form or fashion, whether it's a pressure cooker at a marathon. You know, people are going to do violence if they intend to, with a car, potentially. But in this case, it's a constitutional right to bear arms, to have a gun for protection of your home. And I think, again, we have laws in Massachusetts that are working, and I think it's a good model for the rest of the country.
All right. So you've just received an endorsement from the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, and they made reference to Elizabeth Warren's comments in August that the criminal justice system is racist, front to back. So here she is explaining what she meant by that.
There have been studies showing that exactly the same crimes committed by blacks and whites, that blacks are more likely to be arrested and blacks are more likely to be prosecuted.
So she's talking there about institutional racism, which is very different than saying cops are racist. Does she make a good point there?
You know, we took up legislation just at the end of this session that did criminal justice reform to decriminalize certain areas of possession and use. We also have in Massachusetts done a great job of creating drug courts, even veteran courts, to try to do diversionary practices to keep people from being incarcerated. But I think when you say that the entire system is racist front to back, you're blanket indicting everybody, whether it's a law enforcement officer or a corrections officer or a court officer. Even, I think, in my opinion, the legislators who actually make the law, you're in blanket indicting them all as having a motive that is based on racism. I think we're trying to talk about the rule of law, which is trying to keep crime down no matter who's committing it, whatever age, race, sex, or whatever. It's not trying to target any one individual race, in my opinion. It's trying to keep our communities safe.
Well, so again, though, let me come back to this idea. Let's, just for the sake of argument here, what she was trying to say was that, I mean, that's what
Anthony, to be honest with you.
Let me just finish, and then you can totally push back. Blacks are more likely to be arrested and blacks are more likely to be prosecuted than whites for essentially committing the same crimes. So she's talking about a systemic problem. Is that not an issue that's worthy of consideration?
It may be an issue, but the way that the senator handled it, and by again making a blanket statement that indicts everybody, does not add to the productive nature of discussion and how to fix things. When Republicans were working on health care reform over a year ago, she said that Republicans want blood money from the American people. That's the kind of rhetoric that really gets people upset about Republicans, and it's not supposed to be a partisan thing. No Republican runs for office trying to take away health care for people. What they're trying to do is make the system work better for people. And for her, it seems that that's her stock in trade, trying to accuse people of things in order to make herself look like she's the solution. But really, we don't see solutions, just anger being generated.
So Democrats would probably say that Donald Trump has much to do with the political tenor that we're hearing right now in Washington. So let me ask you a question about Trump. You co-chaired his presidential campaign in Massachusetts. You are considered to be the most pro-Trump candidate in the nomination race, which you won. So this is a state that voted 2-1 against President Trump. Doesn't that present a huge challenge for you in this race for the Senate?
Well, to put some context into it, Donald Trump did not contest this state with any real campaign. He also got 20,000 Democrats unenrolled in 2016 to pull a Republican primary ticket when he was running. So I think that there was a shift to seeing a candidate who was actually saying things that no other politician was saying. And yes, I agree that with his tweets and some of the comments he makes, it's difficult to be in support of everything he does. But, and I'm not in support of every single thing.
So you take issue with his tone, let's say, in some cases. Anyway.
Sure. Yeah. But at the same time, this president has done what I feel he promised to do during the campaign, which is reduce international tensions. We now see North Korea a year ago threatening our allies with nuclear weapons, now potentially planning to have an Olympics themselves with the South Korea. We also see in the United States the economy turning around, the gross domestic product up around 4.1%, potentially towards 5%. The stock market hitting all-time highs. Economically, things are going extremely well. He's delivering on those promises, and that's why I supported him in the first place.
What do you say to concern that too much of these economic benefits are only helping the very wealthy? And I'll just cite one study. So the organization Just Capital did an analysis and estimates that about 6% of the money that corporations received as a result of the tax cuts went to workers through pay raises, bonuses, that kind of thing. Respond to this general idea that these economic benefits are largely accruing to the very, very wealthy and contributing to this expanding problem of economic inequality.
I think it's a narrative that tries to continue to push class warfare. I think my wife and I own a small business. Most business owners, most corporations are run by people who actually pay their employees first and then pay themselves afterwards, small business owners. People are seeing wage increases. They're very happy right now, and you're starting to see consumer confidence rise because of that. And I think that shows that people are getting the wage increases and the new jobs being created is really helping our economy and giving us a chance to be more competitive, not just in Massachusetts, but also with other states and internationally.
Let me ask you about one more issue, and then we'll wrap up. But I want to ask you about immigration and family separation at the border. I know you're for border security, that you support the president's approach on this. Did the Trump administration go too far here?
That was actually policy in place under the Obama administration that, thankfully, when it was brought to the attention of the Trump administration, they ceased that, have kept families together. And my opinion is that a solution like what Ted Cruz did, which was say, let's get more judges to the border so we can process people more quickly and keep these families together, I think that was a great solution. But in my opinion, a secure border eliminates the temptation for families to potentially take this risky effort to come into our country illegally.
But we all saw images of families being torn apart, kids in cages. I mean, do you have any issues with the way the White House is going about this?
Look, I've talked to Border Patrol agents. I have talked to Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. They all feel that the president's efforts to try to actually address secure border is the right way to go. I mean, there has been fence authorization in the past with Republicans and Democrats both supporting that. There was miles and miles of fence built in Texas and California and Arizona. The fact of the matter is it's just not a complete border and a fully secure border. I think all he's trying to do is make sure that we take immigration law as seriously as possible. If anybody wants to become a citizen of the United States, let's bring them in, but let's have it done legally.
Jeff Deal, last question, and this gets back to some of this rhetoric that we're hearing in this current political moment. The president has said on more than one occasion that the media is the enemy of the people. Do you agree with that?
I would not say the media is the enemy. I unfortunately feel like the media has become almost as divided in some ways on one side or the other, and I think that is a problem. I really hate the fact that people go on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and feel that they can attack even their neighbors right now. And unfortunately, we feel like it's a more divided country than it's ever been. And I certainly want to do what I can down in Washington to reduce those tensions, focus on the state of Massachusetts, what's good about it, what can be great about it for the future.
But isn't it important to speak out and call the president out when he makes statements like that? I mean, because that comes from the Stalinist world. The media is the enemy of the people. I've been at those Trump rallies where he's gotten the whole audience to turn around and sort of jeer at us. I'm not saying feel sorry for me. I'm just saying it's a scary thing when the leader of the free world does that.
Well, I mean, first of all, we have free speech, and of course that allows for the media. But at the same time, I think free speech also means you can question the media. And for a long time, it's felt like certain aspects of the media are focused on attacking one party. And I'm not trying to say it's about party, but unfortunately, it does seem like that can be the case sometimes. And I think what the president was doing was actually just letting people know, hey, there is a problem. And I feel like the media is part of it.
All right. Well, Jeff Deal, Massachusetts State Representative for the 7th Plymouth District, and he is the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate. Jeff, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Great time, Anthony. Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.